Please note that the information and advice provided via the Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed or substituted for professional medical advice, counselling, or any other type of therapy or professional advice. I do not provide specific medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. And if you have any concerns about a medical condition, please consult with your GP or other qualified healthcare provider. Please do not disregard professional medical advice or delay seeking it because of something you've heard whilst listening to this podcast. Hi everyone, I'm Rada.
And I'm Giles.
And we're your trusted guides for the Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast. The podcast that helps you remember, relearn, rediscover and be inspired by others about what might help you feel good on this journey that we call life.
And we're starting right now on our journey to discover those things you forgot were good for you and inspire you to remember them. So without further ado, let's talk about this week's theme.
Lisa Nand is our guest today. Lisa is a journalist specialising in travel. She also makes and presents podcasts, including the UK number one Big Travel Pod. You'll recognise her voice from TV and radio with all the latest comments on all things travel and holiday.
Good. Lisa, it's fantastic to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for being with us. Now, as you know, from when I came on your brilliant podcast, I am not very well traveled. You are very well traveled. When did this bug for traveling start for you? Have you been traveling all your life?
Not quite all my life. The first 6 weeks, I didn't go anywhere, I don't think. I was on the Wirral, and I think they kept me quite close to home. But I went on my first holiday when I was 6 weeks old, and I remember it well. It was great. There was lots of milk. I was 6 weeks old. We went to Wales, apparently, and it rained all the time. And bearing in mind I'm a summer baby, that sort of is quite an indication about how all my summer birthdays went when I lived in this country all the time, which unfortunately I still do. Not unfortunately, I do love it. But yeah, I was 6 weeks old when I went on my first holiday. Cried all the time. It rained all the time. It was to Wales, but it must have given me the travel bug. My dad's from the Fiji Islands and my mum's English, and we moved to live in Spain when I was seven. And I don't know, actually, it's just always made me really, really happy. And I think only recently have I realized just how happy traveling and exploring and going somewhere new makes me.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Like, I know that Fingerola is, am I right? You lived in Fingerola.
That's
up.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And Fingerola is actually the only place in Spain I've been to randomly. So although I'm not very well traveled, one of the only places I've been to in the world is Fingerola, which is where you grew up. Tell us a bit about growing up in Fingerola.
I've been to Seaford as well, I've actually been to Seaford and had coffee with you. If you haven't, I'm sure you remember, you haven't blanked it out.
No, I haven't.
I'll tell you what, it's a popular place for holidays. And actually, there was a time in my life when I was a little bit embarrassed to be from there because it got a bit down at heel and a bit embarrassing in the 1990s. It was a bit cheesy. It was a bit sort of full of English breakfast. That probably when you went there, Giles, I'm not sure if that was
Yeah, thanks a lot. It was in the early noughties I went. Yeah, me and Michelle went for a very swift holiday, but yeah.
It might still have been a bit grim, but it's really amazing now. It's really turned around. It's become very Spanish again. Like all the back streets have been opened up and there's hundreds of tapas bars and it's very cultural and it seems to be less sort of English breakfast. Not that there's anything wrong with English breakfast. I like a combination of being able to do my, you know, cheesy home stuff and the cultural stuff wherever I travel. But when I moved there at the age of seven, it really was a very magical place to grow up. And it feels in retrospect like we had this almost barefoot childhood where we were running. Obviously we did wear shoes, it gets quite cold in the winter, but it feels like metaphorically we had this barefoot childhood where we were running around on beaches and camping and paddling through rivers in the hills and going to sand dunes and barbecues and friends' gardens and villas and having this really, really lovely childhood. It was a wonderful thing for my parents to have done for us, even though at the time when I was seven, I really didn't want to leave my home and my school and my friends in the north of England. It was really a fantastic move.
That sounds amazing. And I wonder, I'm just going back to what you said earlier about how in the last few years, you've realised just how happy travel makes you. Obviously, during a pandemic, you know, we couldn't travel. Travel's still for some people, you know, obviously a huge thing and quite a big challenge. And I think our attitudes to travel have changed in different ways, according to whether or not we're still anxious about things, or because the world feels a bit unstable, or the reverse. Actually, because we couldn't travel for so long, we're absolutely desperate to travel. What in your kind of personal experience, but also your professional experience and your work as a travel journalist and broadcaster, what impact do you think the pandemic had on travel, but also our emotional health and our relationship with travel?
That's a really good question. And I think emotional health and mental health is very, very much tied up in travel. You know, people who don't see that during the pandemic, when a lot of, because not everyone feels that, but for me, and certainly for a lot of people, not everyone feels that, admittedly, but during the pandemic, when some people couldn't go away, others were like, oh, boo-hoo, you can't go out on your holiday, you know, you can't go to the Costa del Sol and have tapas or an English breakfast. And actually for many of us, it's so much more than that. It really does keep people's mental health buoyant, you know, throughout the year, not just the actual traveling part of it, but all the run up that goes into that, you know, the booking, the researching, the where should we go, the planning, the looking forward to it. And then bam, suddenly you're there. You know, it really means a lot to people. And to have all that taken away, I think it's like you sort of hinted at there that there's two ways it has affected people, the pandemic. And that probably goes for travel, but also for many things like going out and staying in and going to work or not going to work. And many people have gone, right, that's it. I've realized how much it meant to me. I'm going to go everywhere if I can afford to, or try and go out and explore. And other people have said, oh, I don't really need that in my life necessarily. You know, my life is about my home and my comforts and the people that are in my immediate surroundings. So travel as well, you know, the pandemic has really affected us in many more in-depth ways than I think we anticipated from that comparatively short period of being told to stay at home.
And I totally agree with you about the whole travel thing. It's not just about the actual journey, is it, or the destination? And I mean, that's a really good analogy for life, isn't it? It's not about the destination, it's about all the things that lead up to it. And I was chatting to one of my friends who has just gone to Asia actually recently about how exciting it is, and how actually I find going to the airport and going to the shops in the airport and like all the little kind of, you know, food trays and little packages you get on the flights, for me that's even more exciting sometimes than actually getting to destination. Now, I'm not sure if I'm unusual in that. You probably can tell me if I'm strange or not, but I love all of the build-up and getting a little travel size toiletries and the whole kind of thing, because for me, anticipation, like you were hinting at there, is actually, I think, sometimes 70% of the actual enjoyment.
Absolutely. No. And do you remember during the pandemic, or when we were allowed to travel or do something, we might have been allowed to fly but not go anywhere. Some people were sort of starting up flights to nowhere and actually, you know, getting to the airport, putting your thing in, you know, checking in, getting on a flight, going around for an hour, which is A, terrible for the environment, and to me sounds a little bit boring, because I love that part of it that, like you do, but I do like to know that I'm going somewhere at the end of it. Reminds me a little bit of my grandparents, who absolutely loved Concorde. Do you remember Concorde? It seems bizarre that we were more advanced in those days, you know, flight-wise, than we are now. But my grandparents and my great auntie, for their 80th birthday, each of them in turn went on a flight on Concorde that was a round trip, you know, from Heathrow for about an hour around. It probably did about circumnavigated the world in that time or something. I don't think it was that fast, but an hour, and then came back. And I thought, well, that seems great. But I like the journey, but also, you know, getting to the other place as well.
Yeah, I think like you said, that analogy of like the journey is the thing. But I think when it comes to travel, yeah, going to the place. And so for you, what is that? What's the magic of doing that? Is it learning about new cultures? Is it food? What? I mean, it's probably a combination of lots of things, but what are the main aspects of things that you enjoy about going to new places and seeing?
I've been thinking about this a lot recently because my wings have been clipped a little bit, not just by the pandemic, as everyone's were, but I'm a parent. And of course, when you've got children in school, it's quite frowned upon to take them out of school, although I do have one that's not attending at the moment at all. So theoretically, we could just bugger off and live in the Caribbean. And also it's the money. Because you know you're not just on your own getting your own flight, you know, it's incredibly expensive. And to me, what travel means to me is freedom. And that's the one thing for me in my life, you know, being a parent and the pandemic and everything, that's what I found really difficult, is that freedom taken away from you. And the importance of travel was really brought home to me this summer when I went on my first ever solo trip away. Now, I've been solo traveling before because I've been away for work. But sometimes when it's on a press trip, you're with a group of other journalists. And I cannot tell you, I mean, Giles, you need to get yourself on one of these just to sort of tell you how wonderful it can be. I don't want to give away all the trade secrets, but don't trust anything that travel journalists have to say, because we're all totally, okay, totally easily bought, you know, by five-star hotels. And don't get me wrong, you know, these hotels are amazing, you know, but they have sort of taken us there and shown us how to have an amazing time there. So I have been solo on what you would call group press trips, where I don't know anyone at all, and you go out and but you're with other people. And then I've been sort of solo for parts of travels where I've organized events or you know, or a corporate film or something somewhere, and I've had to pop out on my own to dinner. So, you know, I have been in other countries on my own or without people close to me. But this summer, I went for 3 days in Ibiza for no reason. I wasn't meeting anyone there. I didn't have any friends there at the time. And I just went for 3 days on my own. And I cannot tell you how incredible it was to have that freedom, to have no responsibilities, no constraints on my time, to decide whether I was going to go to the beach or the pool or what I was going to have to eat, to go and sit in a restaurant on my own, to turn up to a club on my own, you know, which takes guts might not be the right word for it, but you know, it takes, even though I'm quite a confident outgoing person, and even with me it's like, okay, I'm going to a club on my own, like what shall I do, I'm standing here a bit awkwardly. It was just that immense sense of freedom. It was just really, really fantastic.
I love that. It's not quite the same, but I remember when I was a medical student, we went on what we called an elective. So you go around the world and you work in different country, for example, and in those days it was actually sort of, the whole thing was about 3 months, but you know, you kind of worked for a month and then you traveled for a month either side, which was absolutely incredible. And the sense of, I went to Australia for part of it, and the sense of waking up in the morning and just going, oh, what shall we do today? It's like nothing in your diary, no constraints, no having to be anywhere, no having to answer to anybody, and literally just saying, what do you fancy doing? And that is such a refreshing and novel way to be, isn't it, in the world we live in, where everything is very regimented, everything is very timed, and everything kind of feels like there isn't enough time, and almost like you know, just having even one of those events every sort of couple of months, you're like, wow, I can just decide what we want to do. What should we do? It's that whole freedom. But I think it's so good for our brains as well, just to adapt and to kind of be open to new things. Like you were saying, Giles, I mean, food and culture and learning about how people live and learning about, you know, what local people do there and their attitude to life. I mean, it's basically, there's such an opportunity for exchanging information about life, but in a really subtle, not sort of overt way. It's almost like you absorb it rather than someone sitting there in a lesson telling you, right, this is what this is what this country does and this is what this culture does. You just almost absorb it, and it kind of almost becomes part of you. Do you think we, wherever we've been, do you think we kind of carry a little, like an old-fashioned passport where you used to get a stamp for each country? Do you think we carry a little bit of each country and place we've been to in our sort of soul or our systems as we move along?
Oh, I absolutely love that. And yes, I think we do. And there's a little, not, I don't know if there's any been any research into this. I don't know why anyone would do any research into this at all. But in my experience, I don't know if you guys find this, but when I look in a travel magazine or read an article on a travel destination, I'm actually more likely to read about somewhere I've already been than I am about somewhere I haven't been. And it's kind of exactly like that. It's collecting those stamps, those memories, sort of ticking things off a list. I think it's why people end up rather cheesily, I think, sort of counting what countries they've been to. And, you know, it can get a little bit American tourist on a trip to Europe and going to like 51 capitals. I don't even think there are 51 capitals. And,
well, Giles and I don't know, so it's all right. We believe you.
There are 51 capitals of Europe. But, you know, sort of ticking those off. So it can get a little bit like that. But I do believe absolutely, you know, there's that it's identifying with somewhere you've been. And, you know, that what the curious thing is that no matter where you go, you will find that people are all the same. And that's one of the lovely things about travel, I think, is that you realize that everyone just wants to get on. Everyone wants to be happy. They want their friends and family to be happy and healthy. They want love. They want nice food. They want relaxing times. We just all want the same things. And, you know, I almost think that you know, that travel really goes a long way to sort of address racism and prejudice, because especially if you do like long overland trips, I've only done a few, but I know I have plenty of people on the podcast that do long trips around the world. And if you go from here to, you know, China on the train, you can see people's faces changing, the color of their skin changing, the shape of their eye sort of changing as you go, the food sort of being passed down geographically and from generations. And it just does realize, it just makes you realize how connected we all are.
I think that's such an important lesson, isn't it? We literally are one world, but we forget about that because we get in our own little silos, our own countries and communities. And like you say, when you travel, you think, actually, you know what, we're all basically the same. And I think a lot of that empathy, a lot of that understanding could go a long way in terms of dealing with a lot of the global issues that we're facing as a world.
Absolutely. I think we should get holidays on the NHS. I realise we don't have that sort of funding. And politically, we should be given holidays. That's going to be the campaign that I start, I think.
I'm backing this all the way. So because for anything, I need to go to more places.
Well, maybe we should do a little travel show together. This is what we should do.
Ah, this is
you
it.
Who's
yes.
been nowhere and me who's been everywhere.
Yes.
Let's pitch that to someone, because I'm totally up for that. I really am.
Absolutely.
You know, it's not that, you know, I know the topic on this podcast is about the things that you've forgotten that make you happy. But I think that travel is just so much a part of happiness. And actually, you know, again, about the pandemic, it's not that we forgot it, but it was taken away from us. So it is kind of, you know, almost like we've forgotten it. And it makes me happy even just talking about it.
Yeah.
Well, with that mind, actually, obviously you mentioned this trip to Ibiza. What other places have you been that have kind of really got you and have made you really sort of that, feel that sort of pure happiness?
I keep getting drawn back to Thailand. I feel like I'm a happy person generally, but I'm not sure about you guys, but I feel like everyone's got a lot of stress and strain and lowness in their lives at the moment. Do you feel like you feel like
I was saying that to someone literally the other day. I think everyone, and even sort of, you know, in my job clinically, seeing people, I think we're all struggling a lot. There's so much heaviness and a lot of trauma, a lot of kind of mental health, physical health issues that are coming up. So I totally agree with you. I think at the moment everyone's feeling very stressed and very overwhelmed, I think is probably the word I'd
absolutely
use.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know why. Again, you know, we keep on harping on about it, but it was quite life-changing, the pandemic, and, you know, maybe sort of with far-reaching consequences. And I've Giles knows this probably, but I've got a child who hasn't been to school for 2 months, a 10-year-old, because he's having issues, health issues about attending and everything. So my life has been quite challenging, you know, recently as a single parent, as a freelancer, trying to work, someone with kids that don't always go to school. They're locked in the kitchen as we speak now, and it's a middle, we're not locked in, no, actually they could open the door if they wanted to, but it's the middle of the school day. But you did ask me, I'm getting to the point, this is relevant as to to where has really made my heart sing. And when I was in my early 20s, the first place I really went that was very exotic was Thailand. And I was working for as an events producer in this sort of posh Soho events production company. And instead of, you know, everyone's thinking, I did set off to travel the world when I was 21 or 22 when I'd finished university. And actually, my boyfriend, my then boyfriend, and I tossed a coin as to whether we would go to Amsterdam for the summer, try and earn some money, or stay in Brighton. And it was tails. And we went to Amsterdam literally the next day. We were meant to save up to go traveling the world, and we got as far as Belgium, and we were away for about 10 months. Our relationship took a dive. We had no money. It was really depressing. It was really adventurous, you know, at the time. But I never got to travel the world at the age of whatever, when everyone finishes university. So everyone thinks that their first trip to Thailand is going to be with like a backpack or whatever. Mm-hmm. My first trip to Thailand was age 25, in business class with a flatbed on British Airways.
That's the way to do it, Lisa.
A chauffeur-driven car, staying in a five-star hotel for months, you know, getting all our washing done, having drivers, and having an expense account, which was just unlimited, going around Bangkok, going to all the best restaurants with the twinkly lights and everything. And it was just amazing. And during that time, I went down to the, you know, flew down to the beaches for the weekend and just found it fantastic. And going through this, you know, relatively challenging time recently, I remember sort of think, you know, having some quite low thoughts and thinking, oh God, I don't know how long I can carry on like this anymore. And I asked myself, is it anything, you know, when you're having those low thoughts, you kind of do know that the next day, or at least sometime in the near future, something is going to be okay, you know, to make it okay. And I asked myself, is it anything that a week in Thailand wouldn't cure? And my answer was like, no, you know, if I could have a week in Thailand, leaving tomorrow, even leaving in a few weeks, you know, something to look forward to, that would really, really, really help me. And I've sort of carried that with me whenever I felt like the, you know, the strain of the current challenges. Is it anything that a week in Thailand wouldn't cure? And actually, I think no. So do you know what? I'm going to try and take that week in Thailand soon. And my 3 days in Ibiza actually felt like a week, because I had so much freedom and so much time on my hands away from my usual responsibility. So I do keep, that's my very long-winded way of saying, I do keep getting drawn back to Thailand. But I love Southeast Asia. I love the beaches, the people, the culture. The Cambodia, Vietnam, Malaysia, all those places are just utterly magical, really.
I do like that phrase, actually, and that you can adapt that, can't you, to whoever you are and what kind of person you are and what you actually enjoy. But yeah, is this feeling going to get better, you know? And if I did the most favorite thing in my life, or the most favorite thing that I enjoy, would I feel a little, even a tiny little bit better? And if the answer is yes, then that's a good sign, isn't it? A good way to cultivate hope and kind of, like you say, that feeling that things will improve. I'm always really fascinated about travel, and maybe a bit of travel snobbery, because I think sometimes when you chat to people about where they've been in the world, or where you've been in the world, or even the types of holiday, sometimes I've come across people being a little bit snobby about the types of travel. So, you know, you have that kind of classic idea of people going skiing and for the ski season, and then you have kind of people who say, oh, I only like city breaks, and I think, you know, beach holidays where you just lie around sunbathing are just totally uncivilized. Do you come across, is there snobbery in terms of travel conversations, or is it just me?
Oh my God, everyone's so snobby about travel, particularly in the travel writing world, where, you know, if you're not, you know, sticking on a backpack and, you know, traveling around Nepal on your own with no shoes for 10 months, you haven't been traveling, you know, if you're not Leveson Wood and disappearing off, or Bear Grylls or whoever. And, you know, I don't sort of subscribe to any of that. I love all culture, high and low culture. And that's what I really like about Fuengirola, going back to Giles's one Spanish holiday, is that you can, you know, I'm really quite happy to have the beautiful tapas and go to the festivals and go to the mountains and, you know, speak to the locals. I'm also quite happy to be found in a trashy English bar on the seafront, drinking shots and dancing on the bar and, you know, YMCAing it.
That
or whatever.
That sounds really good,
Lisa.
I'm
going
to come and join
night.
You for that bit.
Yes, exactly. I've got absolutely no snobbery about it whatsoever. Well, I say that everyone's got a certain amount of prejudice, but no. You know, there is that in the travel writing community, but there's that in the holiday community. And, you know, whatever floats your boat, if you want to go and lie on a beach in Lanzarote, I can totally see the appeal in that. Mm-hmm. I can also see the appeal of hiking in Nepal or, you know, whatever, you know, doing those sort of more chin strokey type holidays. Like, do you know what? I just want to do it all. I want to do it all. And the only problem with that is not being able to afford to.
Yeah. Well, I was going to come back to that because I want to kind of take travel perhaps, I suppose, more into more tangible realm, because obviously, you know, money is tight for a lot of people, for all of us. It's getting harder to afford holidays and travel. I mean, for me, during the pandemic, that was also a great sort of template of for me to sort of think about travel in a different light and think about traveling more in this country or actually even traveling differently in my own area. And by that, I mean, you know, when I used to go out for a bike ride.
Going to the local shop.
Well, yeah, go for like a bike ride in my local area or walk, but actually just doing things in a different order. Now, this can sound really strange, but it's the same principle, I think, as traveling in terms of opening up your mind to doing something slightly differently, because our brains will get into this habit, won't they, of driving the same route to places, going the same way. And during the pandemic, I did, because I was getting so bored of being in my local area,
walking.
I was like, maybe I'll mix it up a bit. So even just doing the same walk or the same cycle in reverse order or direction, or even just like wandering down a path and finding somewhere new, even if it's just another kind of path in a wood, I think probably for me anyway, has a little bit of the same elements of opening your mind as travel abroad does. I mean, would you agree with that? Because I think a lot of people, when they hear the word travel, just think automatically of an exotic beach or expensive holidays, for example.
Absolutely. I'm all about exploring at home and making it feel, doing the you know, sometimes I think about what is it about holidays that make me happy, about traveling that makes me happy. And often it is the freedom to walk around, to try out that new cafe, to go to that museum, to take in that incredible view. Basically, I was just like walking, looking and eating, I think, and drinking, actually. And I really do try and do that on my home turf, in my hometown, or go to another town and do it. And of course, it's not always easy, because here we have, you know, we've got to work, we've got kids, we've got commitments, we've got things that, you know, prevent us from wondering, waking up in the morning thinking, oh, what shall I do today? You know, not many of us have the luxury of being able to do that. But when you do have the time, I really, you know, I actually really seek that out, you know, looking at the new. And I'm lucky enough to live here in Brighton. You know, I've always chosen to live in beautiful areas if I can. When I lived in London, it was in Greenwich. When I lived here in Brighton, and it is a lovely place to live, as Giles knows. With it, and that you're not a traveller, Giles, but I do notice your lovely pictures of Seaford, and you know, really getting in and out there and enjoying what life has to offer locally. And I think that's absolutely, you know, another way to keep us happy.
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel incredibly grateful to live where we do, and yeah, I want to try and make the most of, you know, the beautiful surrounding areas. You know, we're right on the South Downs, we've got the Seven Sisters nearby, and just every day I will get to the seafront for a walk. So yeah, it's making the most of those areas that you live in. And yeah, I like the idea of travel. You know, you're always moving forward, you're always growing in some way, and that's how I kind of perceive travel a lot of the time.
Well, that's a very perceptive way to perceive travel, because there's a whole philosophy of travel. Why do we travel? And I think it is to keep moving forward. And in a very basic survival sense, from many, many years ago, that's why we're all here. Mm. You know, that's why early humans found their way out of Central Africa. We're looking over the horizon. We're looking as to what's next. Where's the next dry land? Where's the river we can get water from? Where are the crops? Where are the animals? Where can we conquer later? Mm. You know, it is absolutely, you know, looking, the philosophy of travel when you get into it is actually really quite interesting as to why we travel.
And that's now turned into, which planet can we visit next and where can we go?
Mm. I'm not attracted by space travel at all. It doesn't appeal to me. I love the earth. I know this sounds weird, but I love the earth. I love the skies. I love the geology. I love the map. I love sitting on Brighton Beach and imagining where how the earth curves from there, where it falls from, you know, going down through Europe, through Spain, through Africa to the south, like, you know, what happens when you get around. Of course, we know what happens when you get around because, you know, we're not flat earthers, but well, I'm not. I don't know about you guys.
I'm not.
Like, me too. You know, three.
But I love that. I love the sense of geography and earth, and also, I just want to be able to do more of it.
It kind of just makes you appreciate as well, doesn't it, how incredible life is. Like you say, when you travel, and not just people and cultures and different, you know, different communities, but also, like you say, the geography and, you know, just the incredible things that life has created, from huge mountain ranges to, you know, to massive rivers and oceans. And you just think, wow, is this sometimes, like when I travel and you get those moments where you look around and you just think, wow, is this actually real? This is so magical. Yeah. Is this actually real? It's almost, you know, kind of something like one of the best films you could ever watch, or the most magical things you could ever think of or create. And it's here and it's real life. But sometimes I do have those moments where I think, wow, this is just amazing.
And we have it in this country as well. You know, people come from all over the world to visit London, to visit the coast, to visit the villages, to go to Stratford-upon-Avon, you know, to go to these like quaint little beautiful places. And I think often the trick is to sort of keep our eyes open and remember, see it through other people's eyes, because, you know, we are a place of travel. People want to come here as well as us going other places as well. I had this, when we were talking about everything being really connected, have you ever like felt like for a fleeting moment that you know the meaning of life?
Sometimes when I get those moments where literally you're kind of, you almost can't put it into words, or you just think, yes, wow, but wow doesn't even sum it up. Wow is like literally, yes, that's not a great word for it, but you get a feeling of, my gosh.
I like to think that the meaning of life is kind about. Of wordless. It's like a... It's just a feeling. Mm. It's not actually, you can't put it into words.
Mm. Yeah, it's a feeling. And if you try and put it into words, the thought goes, the feeling is gone before you've managed to put it into words. This is going to sound really, really stupid, but I was at a Kaiser Chiefs gig at the O2 about 5 years ago, not long ago, in London, the big O2. And at the very end, like we're all bopping along to that song that's oh my god, I can't believe it, I've never been far away from home, you know. And it was just like, it was quite a weird day because my cousin in Fiji had just died. So my dad comes from Fiji, which is the other side of the world. You can't go to Fiji without starting to come back, you know, there's no further you can go. And my cousin, who I'd only met once, she was the same age as me, she lived in Sydney, Australia, and she was really lovely. And she died that day, I think, of cancer. She'd been ill for a while. So that was really emotional. But I didn't know her, but it was, you know, it means something to you. Mm. And you think, you know, she had a time 16-year-old daughter. So it was really sad and, very sort of, really makes you think. And I'd gone to the concert that night and I was standing there and Ricky, you know, was doing his, oh my God, I can't believe it, I've never been this far away from home. And suddenly I could see sort of in my mind's eye, I could see the stage, I could see everyone jumping up and down having an amazing time, and I could see again almost like the curve of the earth almost reaching all the way down, you know, every one of us being connected or reaching all the way down to Fiji and Australia and all, you know, just this like big human, oh my god, I know the meaning of life sort of moments at a Kaiser Chiefs concert. And I said to my husband afterwards, who's a therapist, I felt a bit stupid, but I said, David, like, we're separated now, but we're still friends and everything. But I said to him, I had this moment. He's a therapist. And I thought, do you ever hear people talk about that? And he said, yeah, I actually do. But it's usually with 18-year-olds, you know, people who are still fresh and discovering life and still trying to find the meaning. And actually, I think the last time I had that, I know the meaning of life feeling, it was when I was about 18. So it just kind of goes back to sort of travel and the earth and of course, Ricky Wilson.
That's his name. Ricky Wilson as well. Yeah.
Ricky Wilson helped me find the meaning of life.
Like you say, Lisa, when something really, really tragic or difficult happens as well, it does, our brain sometimes kind of go into that reframing and perspective mode as well, isn't it? Of actually, wow, look at what's around us and let's try to appreciate every single moment of life because it's so precious.
Definitely.
Yeah, which I think travel also does, and travel anywhere actually, or just those little moments where you look at the earth and you just think, my goodness, you know, this is so magical. Is it actually real? which
absolutely.
Is
I on the Big Travel podcast, I ask everyone a music question at the end, because I believe that music and travel, you know, really do go hand in hand. But it is exactly what you said. It's about the cementing those moments and giving you something to hang that moment on, something to remember it, whether that's a scent or a taste, or in this music sense, you know, a sound, an auditory memory, which makes things even more intense in some ways. And the question I ask is to ask people, if I had to ask you to name one song that reminds you of a special moment of time in travel, during your travels, what is that song and what is the moment? And it gets the most amazing answers from people, because it does take them exactly what you were saying there. It takes you back to that moment. And it helps you appreciate those moments more. And I have those moments all the time, particularly when music is playing, you know, might be sitting on the beach with friends, or even singing in the kitchen and the kids come in and, you know, you have a little dance around, you know, it's acknowledging those special moments, isn't it?
Yeah, music is incredible for that, and is always evocative, isn't it? And it evokes, yeah, like say places, memories, or anything, like you've had an experience with music's been involved in it, you're straight back there.
Exactly. And scents as well. I remember scents, you know, from school. I've never smelt them again, but I can remember what my school smelt like when I was 5 years old, that sort of disinfectant bleach type smell.
Yeah. Bunsen burners.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Great combination. Yeah. Bunsen burners and inflammatory cleaning products.
Oh, well, Lisa, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. You've been absolutely brilliant. Do you know what? You've just made me, through your different stories and what you've been saying, you've just made me go into that place of lying on the beach somewhere or sitting in the sunshine with that beautiful moment for me. Anyway, it's the most perfect moment on holiday where the sun is just about to go down and you get that beautiful golden sunshine, and you know, you hear the sea or you hear the smell of kind of dinner cooking, and everyone's in that kind of really relaxed mode. So some of the things you said literally taken me back into that moment and definitely made me want to go and book my next holiday like now.
Well, I think that's it. And when I speak to people on the podcast, you know, because I do this all the time, sort of, you know, once every couple of weeks professionally, I'm talking to people about that. And it takes me there as well. And I'm kind of like, oh my God, this is actually quite, you know, difficult, like, because I want to be there right now. And that's what, you know, bringing it back to some of the things that we were saying during this conversation, it's about also enjoying those moments when you are on holiday and you are traveling and you are doing something different, but trying also to seek those out in our everyday, you know, to capture those moments, to listen to the song, to go see the sunset, to, you know, enjoy dancing around the kitchen, to try and capture that feeling during our everyday as well. Mm. So I'm reminding myself to do that.
I love that. Thank you so much, Lisa. Thank you.
It's been great.
Thank you. It was really lovely chatting to you.
So that's the end of another Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast episode. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope it's inspired you to go looking for all of the things that might help you feel a little bit better.
And hopefully we've inspired you to go looking for our podcast. You can find it on all good podcast platforms, probably some of the bad ones as well. You can also find us on social media. Our handle is Radha.
Yes, Giles, absolutely. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Forgot Podcast. So go and find us there. We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week.